VOA What? The hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, John Russell, and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A new Brazilian trial of one of China's COVID-19 vaccines found that the treatment was only effective about 50% of the time. The CoronaVac vaccine was developed by China's Sinovac biotech company. On Tuesday, researchers said a new late-stage trial in Brazil showed the vaccine was just 50.4% effective at preventing symptomatic infections. The Brazilian trial included data on what the researchers called very mild COVID-19 cases. Last week, researchers said the vaccine had performed with 78% effectiveness against mild to severe cases. CoronaVac is one of several vaccines being developed by Chinese companies. On New Year's Eve, China approved its first COVID-19 vaccine for use by the public in China. The developer of that vaccine, Sinopharm, said early test data showed that its shots were 79% effective. However, the company did not release detailed information about the studies and said research and trials were still going on. Several nations have completed agreements with Sinovac Biotech to receive the CoronaVac vaccine. Both Malaysia and Singapore have such agreements. The latest results from the Brazilian trial led those countries to say that they will seek more data on the vaccine's effectiveness before approving and buying supplies. The chairman of Sinovac Biotech, Yinwei Deng, defended the performance and safety of the vaccine after the new results were released. He told reporters the Brazilian trial results are sufficient to prove that CoronaVac's safety and effectiveness are good around the world. The Sinovac biotech chief added that while different countries used vaccines from the same batch in their trials, they did not use the same testing methods. Health experts have raised concerns about the testing and trials of CoronaVac and other Chinese vaccines. They say the Chinese vaccines have not gone through the same public scrutiny as vaccines developed in the United States and Europe. The experts have called for more data on the trials to be shared. The new data from Brazil was released just as Indonesia began its vaccination campaign. Reports say that President Joko Widodo was first in the country to receive the CoronaVac vaccine. Malaysia said Wednesday it would only move forward with plans to receive the vaccine if the shots met all local requirements for safety and effectiveness. The Malaysian company Pharma Niaga BHD, signed a deal Tuesday with Sinovac to buy 14 million doses of CoronaVac and later to manufacture the vaccine locally. Singapore said it will wait and examine official data released by Sinovac before deciding whether to approve the vaccine. Thailand, which has ordered 2 million doses of CoronaVac, said it was still planning on receiving the vaccine starting next month. But it added that officials will also seek more trial data directly from Sinovac. I'm Brian Lin.
Cuba wants more foreign visitors to come to the communist country. The government opened beach resorts in November in an effort to help part of the economy that has been hurt by the spread of the coronavirus. Francisco Duran of the Ministry of Public Health said recently that around 1,000 visitors were entering Cuba daily. Most of them were going to resorts where COVID-19 policies have been effective. But a small number of visitors were going to the Cuban capital, some after visiting the beach. Cuba, like other Caribbean countries, depends heavily on foreign visitors or tourists. Tourism represented about 10% of Cuba's economy in 2019, but last year, the economy shrank by 11%. Luis Enrique Gonzalez runs a private eatery in Havana. A month ago, there were no foreign tourists to be seen, he said, as a few guests ate at outdoor tables. Now, some Europeans, Canadians, and Latin Americans have appeared, but only a few hotels are open. Little by little, there is more movement, and that's a start, Gonzalez said of the capital, which just a year ago had many tourists walking its streets. Cuba's daily infection numbers remain low in comparison to other nearby countries. Cuban officials say there have been just 148 deaths from COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. But the infection numbers have increased sharply over the past month. Flights from the United States and a few other countries were reduced as of the first of the year. The communist government reported that about 1 million tourists visited last year. It wants to increase that by 100% in 2021. Still, those numbers are far below the more than 4 million arrivals in 2019. Visitors get tests for the coronavirus at the airport, and again in 5 days, unless they are staying at a hotel, where they are watched by a medical team. Beginning on January 10th, visitors will need to have received a PCR test, a kind of coronavirus test, within 72 hours of their arrival. Travelers staying at hotels in cities are expected to stay inside until the airport test gives a negative result. If staying in private homes, visitors must remain inside until getting the 5-day test's result. Visitors to some areas can visit the beaches and restaurants as long as they stay away from the local community. "Who is going to come to Cuba to be shut up in a house?" said Norma Hernandez, who rents out rooms in Havana. Tour guide Carlos Diaz is happy to have some work. He said he was showing 38 German visitors around the old town recently. The tourists are coming back bit by bit, he said. Two British couples said they, like the Germans, had been staying at Varadero Beach. They noted the lack of tourists, but praised the buildings and sense of safety. We will be back when everything is back to normal, Tony Kelly said. I'm John Russell.
The first human moon landing happened more than 50 years ago. But did you know that human astronauts were not the first Earthlings to travel in space and circle the moon? That honor goes to two Russian tortoises and several smaller creatures that went along for the ride. On September 14th, 1968, the Soviet space program sent two tortoises, along with some flies and worms, into space for a trip around the moon. NASA calls it the first successful circumlunar mission carried out by any nation. After a week-long trip, the tortoises landed on Earth by parachute in the Indian Ocean. They traveled back to Moscow on October 7th. Both tortoises survived the trip, but not the experiment. NASA records state that the animals were dissected on October 11th, 1968, to see how their bodies were affected by the space travel. Dissection showed that the main structural changes in the tortoises were caused by a lack of food and not the space travel. The tortoises had lost about 10% of their body weight, but they had stayed active and showed no loss of appetite. When compared with a control group of tortoises on Earth, the space-traveling creatures had a small amount of spaceflight-related atrophy. When parts of the body atrophy, they decrease in size or waste away. The experiment demonstrated that the animals could travel around the moon and survive. But this did not mean that humans could do the same. That possibility required more testing. While tortoises were the first to travel around the moon, other animals have helped humans understand and explore space. On its website, NASA explains its history with animals in space. In 1948, the U.S. began launching rhesus monkeys into space aboard a spacecraft called the V-2 Blossom. The monkey Albert I went up on June 11th. On June 14th, 1949, aboard another V-2 flight, Albert II reached a height of about 133 kilometers. Albert II died on impact at reentry. The last V-2 flight was on December 12th, 1949. It involved the monkey Albert IV. On its website, NASA calls it a successful flight with no ill effects on the monkey until impact when it died. While the United States was experimenting with a lot of monkeys, the Soviet Union was experimenting with a lot of dogs. On November 3, 1957, the Soviet Union launched Sputnik 2 into Earth's orbit, with a dog named Laika on board. NASA scientists say that Laika died after a few hours. Sputnik 2 continued to orbit for 5 months and then burned up in the outer atmosphere in April 1958. Then, later that year, on December 13th, the U.S. launched a squirrel monkey named Gordo, about 965 kilometers high, in a Jupiter rocket. Scientists were able to observe his body functions. Gordo's capsule was never found in the Atlantic Ocean. He died on splashdown when a flotation device failed. However, scientists said readings taken of his breathing and heartbeat proved that humans could survive a similar trip. These are just a few examples of how animals have helped humans explore space. We should not forget that mice and cats have also been used to help scientists better understand how travel beyond Earth affects living things. I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History, in VOA Special English. There was one main issue in America's presidential election of 1916. That issue was war. Europe was in the middle of what is now remembered as World War I. It was the bloodiest conflict the world has ever known. Most Americans wanted no part of the struggle in Europe. They supported their country's official position, neutrality. This desire was the main reason President Woodrow Wilson won re-election. People gave Wilson their votes because they hoped he would continue to keep America out of the war. Larry West and Morris Joyce tell more about the presidency of Woodrow Wilson.
Like most Americans, Woodrow Wilson did not want war. He feared that entering the conflict would cost the United States many lives. Wilson read the reports from European battlefields. The news was unbelievably terrible. By the end of 1916, several million men had been killed, wounded, or captured. At the Battle of Verdun, French forces stopped a German attack. The cost was high on both sides. More than 700,000 soldiers were killed, wounded, or captured. The Battle of the Somme followed. Britain lost 60,000 men on the first day. By the time the battle was over, losses for both sides totaled more than a million. Germany also was at war on its eastern border with Russia. Losses on that battlefront, too, totaled more than a million men.
At the time of America's presidential election in 1916, Germany seemed to be winning the war. Its losses were terrible. But the losses of its enemies, the Allies, were even worse. German forces occupied much of northern France and almost all of Belgium. German and Austrian soldiers also held parts of Russia, Italy, Romania, and Serbia. Germany was winning on the battlefield. The Allies were winning at sea. A British blockade cut off almost all German trade with the rest of the world. Even food shipments were blocked. As a result, Germany faced mass starvation. It urgently needed to break the blockade and get food.
This situation finally forced Germany to make the decision that would bring the United States into the war. It decided to use its submarines to break the British blockade. The submarines would attack any ships that came near Britain or other parts of Europe. This included ships from neutral countries, like the United States. Earlier, Germany had made a promise to the United States. Its submarines would not attack civilian ships unless warning was given and the lives of those on the ships were saved. Now Germany was withdrawing that promise. It said unrestricted submarine warfare would begin immediately. German ruler Kaiser Wilhelm said, "If Wilson wants war, let him make it, and let him then have it."
President Wilson immediately broke diplomatic relations with Germany. He still hoped the two nations would not go to war. He left that decision to Germany. If German submarines sank American ships, Wilson would have no choice but to declare war. Most American shipping companies feared attack by German submarines. Throughout the early part of 1917, they kept their ships in home ports. They wanted protection. So, they asked for permission to arm their ships. At first, President Wilson refused to seek such permission from Congress. He did not want to do anything that might cause Germany to declare war. Then, he received secret news from Britain. British agents had gotten a copy of a telegram from Germany's foreign minister to Germany's ambassador in Mexico. The telegram said Germany was planning hostile acts against the United States. Wilson acted quickly. He began putting guns and sailors on American trade ships.
It did not take long for the worst to happen. Within days, a German submarine sank an unarmed American ship, the Algonquin. Then three more American ships were sunk. Many lives were lost. President Wilson no longer had a choice between war and peace. There would be war. Wilson called a special session of Congress. Members of both the Senate and House of Representatives gathered in one room. They stood as the president walked quickly to the front. He stood silent for a moment before speaking. This is what he said.
"Fully understanding the serious step I am taking, I advise that the Congress declare the recent acts of the German government to be, in fact, nothing less than war against the United States. It is a fearful thing to lead this great, peaceful people into war. But right is more precious than peace. and we will fight for the things which we have always carried nearest our hearts. For democracy, for the rights and liberties of small nations, and for the belief that a worldwide union of free people can bring peace and safety to all nations.
President Wilson's emotional speech brought tears to the eyes of many of the lawmakers. They felt the great seriousness of his request. Outside, crowds lined the street to cheer Wilson as he returned to the White House from the Capitol building. He sat in his car and shook his head sadly. "Think of what it is they are cheering," he said. "My message today was a message of death for our young men. How strange it seems they would cheer that." On April 6, 1917, Congress approved a declaration of war against Germany.
The Allies, Britain, France, and Russia, welcomed American involvement. The war was going badly for them. It had been very costly in lives, money, and supplies. Allied shipping was suffering heavy losses from German submarine attacks. A British naval blockade had greatly reduced food shipments to Germany. Now, Britain itself faced dangerously low supplies of food. Allied representatives went to Washington to explain what the Allies needed. They needed supplies, especially food, immediately. They needed money to pay for the supplies. They needed ships to get the supplies from America to Europe. And they needed American soldiers.
President Wilson and Congress worked together to organize the United States for war. Congress gave Wilson new wartime powers. He soon formed a council to build ships, improve industrial production, and control national transportation. He formed an agricultural agency to increase food production and food exports. And he formed an information committee to build public support for the war. Wilson's efforts succeeded. The Allies quickly got the ships, supplies, and money they requested. Most important, they soon got American soldiers.
Allied military leaders said only about 500,000 troops were needed from the United States. But American officials decided to build a much larger army. Before long, large numbers of American soldiers were crossing the Atlantic Ocean. They would fight the Germans at the western battlefronts of Europe. The extra strength they gave the Allies would play a major part in helping defeat Germany.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.